You're listening to Security Nation with host Kyle Flaherty.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Security Nation, our new podcast here at Rapid7. I am lucky enough to have with me today Wade Woolwine, who's Director of Global Services and all things analytic response. We'll talk a little bit about what that means as we go into this conversation overall. But thanks, Wade, for joining us.
Absolutely. My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
You bet. And we were joking beforehand that Wade is our first podcast guest. So, of course, we're fighting some of those gremlins that come with the technology and whatnot, but we're excited to actually get this off the ground and certainly excited to have you as the first guest. The thing I wanted to start with, and we're going to talk about incident response kind of in general, but also then and now, because we've seen this kind of big shift in IR in general and the importance of it to security teams. And there's a lot of reasons why, but I'm curious for you, you know, specifically you and your career, how things have progressed. When did the shift happen in your career where incident response just became the thing that people were really focused on?
Well, for me, there really never was a shift. I've been in incident response my entire career. I started out early days hacking things, and hacking led to trying to defend networks. So I've really been doing this my entire career. But looking at it from the overall industry perspective, there's definitely been a growth in the last 10, 15 years. And my gut tells me that the growth is really just a reaction to changes in the threat landscape. So specifically looking at the value of data that attackers are stealing, where this data is, let's face it, there are a lot more businesses today than there were 10, 15 years ago, and most of those businesses are in the business of processing some sort of key information, key data. And certainly, last but not least, who is after that data? And really, at the end of the day, it comes down to normal criminology. The value of financial information, of PII, personally identifiable information, PHI, personal health information, intellectual property, and look, dirty secrets, we'll all remember Ashley Madison. Most of that data is kept online, and it's kept by everyone. So you have the proliferation of data, you have the value of that data going up, and the rest, again, is just normal criminology. The attackers are going to go where the easy money is. The data is easy to get. It's all over the place. It's easy to sell. And that is what's really important to security teams. We're not fighting a static adversary here. The target of choice, the data that they're after, may not be the same next year as it is this year. The things that attackers are doing in order to breach your environments to get that data may not be the same things as they're doing next quarter. So it's a constantly evolving back and forth. It's the traditional good guy, bad guy, cop versus robber.
Yeah. And so, all right, so let's take a step back, and I want to get back to kind of the IR marketplace at a point in later in time, but I want to hit on something that you mentioned earlier about, you know, you've been in this space your entire career, you know, you were hacking stuff, it grew into that, but like, why? What was going on there? You know, here's little Wade Woolwine hacking some stuff up. Like, what kind of drove you into this overall? What inspired you to even care about this stuff?
Hollywood. What else would? Okay, no. Seriously.
Hollywood. All right.
Hollywood,
I like it.
Hollywood, yeah. I mean, Hollywood did definitely have an impact, right? I mean, just, you know, as a kid growing up watching movies like Hackers and some of the other kind of cult classics around hackers and information security and the culture, you know, that played a part of it. But really, it goes back even further than that. I had a really, really unhealthy obsession with Legos, like to the point where I had 10 or 12 crates full of Legos, probably tens of thousands of pieces. And I played with them, you know, as a kid. I loved them. I loved building stuff. And then I also had a pretty unhealthy obsession with electronics, specifically taking them apart and not being able to put them back together, which was, you know, super pleasing to my father. But when I was 7 or 8, my dad brought home our first home computer. It was an Apple IIe. I actually had a disagreement with one of my team members yesterday over whether the Apple IIe came with a mouse or not, and it did not come with a mouse. But so suffice it to say, I'm interested in electronics. I love building stuff, and all of a sudden, this huge piece of equipment is kind of dropped in the middle of the living room, and I was just mesmerized by it. You know, back then, there were about a half dozen things that you could really do with it, and what was really interesting to me was word processing and programming BASIC. Look, what can I say? I really, really like typing. But then that's when Hollywood really came into play. You know, I saw what the movie industry was kind of doing with this really niche market of computer experts, and I was fascinated. So I started to learn how to hack while I was actually holding down jobs as a computer programmer. And then hacking made me want to learn how to defend. So I learned how to defend while I was working as a hacker. And defending is really where it is for me. I really love the incident response and threat detection space of things, because I think it tickles some of that childhood cops and robber games. You know, that's something that I played as a kid with my friends, my cousins, and things like that. And the fact that I've been in services for so long really just means that I like to help a lot of people. I love helping people catch bad guys. That's kind of what makes me tick.
Well, it's funny because you said something that I thought was interesting in when we were first talking about normal criminology. And really, that's what it comes down to, right? We have these criminals, and then we got to have some good guys on the other side. And hopefully we'll have more of those good guys as time goes on. And I love the Apple IIe story because I had the same thing, yet I didn't do any of the stuff that you did. I just played really crappy games on it. And that didn't turn me into anything special. But that's okay. We'll go into that in another podcast with maybe my therapist will join us. So let's get back to the market itself. I told you, this is going to be conversational. Let's get back to the market itself. Recently, there was that post from Gartner's Anton Javakhin about kind of, you know, I think he framed it 2005 to 2016. But let's, you know, talk about the 10 years that we've seen in incident response, because it has become, although there were folks like yourself who have always been kind of in that, it's now become much larger to the point where, of course, folks are marketing, you know, the hell out of this stuff overall. You know, I'll take some blame for that stuff as someone who did a lot of that stuff. But when we look at, you know, when we get rid of the hype, we get rid of the buzz, we get rid of all of that stuff, what are the biggest changes in the IR focus and landscape for companies during the past 10 years?
I'm glad that you didn't tie me to one big change, because let's say that there wasn't one
big
change that really,
I knew
you
wouldn't be able to do that.
Yeah, no, I'm not a man of few words, that's for sure. And it's really, again, about the changing landscape, right? So we have a lot more data that is valuable, that is sellable on the black markets. Subsequently, we have, well, not subsequently, but in addition to that, we have a lot more companies that are keepers of that data. And then when you plug those two things together, you really find an environment that is ripe for criminals to come in. Again, I'm going to stress a lot of classic criminology. You know, we've solved these problems, right? You know, banks used to not have a whole lot of security. Nowadays, you can't go into a bank without going through multi-factor authentication, be videoed, have a security guard. The clerks are behind bulletproof glass. The safe is completely unhackable or unbreakable or whatever it is that safe hackers do. You know, so we have looked at crime historically and reacted to the way that criminals are doing things that they're not supposed to do. This industry is no different. So when we look at, you know, why it's such a big deal nowadays, it's because there are people that are willing to pay to prevent criminals from stealing their data. Yeah, this is kind of a macro view of the problem. But in my opinion, I think we've gotten a little bit too micro with our views on the threat landscape and what it takes to defend ourselves. You know, we live in a world of point solutions. Hey, I have a product that gives me X functionality. I have a product that gives me Y functionality. I have analysts that specialize. I have playbooks that tell me what to do. The problem when we take a look at the industry in that fashion is that we end up going down a rabbit hole and we forget why we're here in the first place. We're here to prevent criminals from doing crime. That comes in a lot of different flavors. That comes with a lot of different defense mechanisms. And it's important to remember that there is a holistic view to what we're doing. It's not just the nitty-gritty. It's not just the IDS or the IPS or your antivirus solution. It's your whole approach to how you prevent crime from materializing in your environment.
So that's interesting. You know, I think that when we talk about products in general as well, it's not just focusing, you know, kind of on that, like you said, point products and how that works. But one of the things that, you know, we keep hearing about overall too is the fact that there's just all these buzzwords and keywords and all these things kind of floating out, whether it's analytics, whether it's endpoint detection and response, IDR, of course, all of these different types of things that are doing it. But what you're saying essentially too is it's not just one thing. You got to be able to combine a lot of those things. Plus, that's just the technology part. What about the people and the processes? Kind of how have those changed as you've seen this last decade in the IR space? How have those evolved?
On the people side of things, you know, unfortunately, I don't think that we've seen that evolve nearly as quickly as we need to. You know, we need a lot more people with the same kind of skills as myself and my team have. You know, we have a very distinct shortage in the industry today. But you know, that's almost kind of expected, right? I mean, you look at more traditional law enforcement, like police forces. You know, police departments are constantly saying that they are understaffed, that they are under-equipped. So this is nothing that is really specific to the IT security organization. And one thing that I really want to hammer on is I'm not just talking about people, process, and technology, because, I mean, obviously those are the cornerstones of what you need to really build good security programs, but you really need a holistic understanding of the attacker mindset, of what you have that attackers want, of how attackers do their business, because all of those data points, all of that information about attackers and their motivations and what they do is going to be used to influence your security programs. The example that I love to give here is, you know, because I'm on a roll here with the law enforcement analogy, so I'll just go ahead and go with another one. You know, companies that provide police departments and law enforcement with the equipment that they use, they are very restricted in the solutions that they can give police officers. Police officers, you've all seen them, they wear bulletproof vests, they have these belts with all these gadgets on it, but it's still stuff that a person needs to be able to carry on them. So they have that restriction. But further, when you look at how the equipment aspect of things have evolved with policemen, it's about the need, or it's about a particular problem that they need to solve. So, for example, police officers are getting shot at. What's the answer? Well, let's outfit them with Kevlar. Let's give them a way to protect themselves when they're being aggressed by an attacker. You know, you look at the fact that police officers want to be able to defend themselves without necessarily having to kill people. So we have non-lethal options like the ASPs, the sticks that they use, as well as pepper spray and non-lethal rounds. So everything that a police officer wears is useful for their job. It's born out of a particular problem that they have, and it needs to be the same thing in the security industry. I have a problem with attackers using this specific technique against me. Well, here are a bunch of controls that I can put in place, and here's a bunch of monitoring that I can put in place in order to prevent them and then detect them if they're able to circumvent those preventive measures. So having the industry focus a lot more on solving problems and having organizations focus their security programs on solving their own internal problems will mean better resilience against threats in the future.
So let's go back to the people part. And I agree. And you know, we got to give better tools. You got to have that utility belt basically for that. But you know, without more police officers or better trained police officers, to keep the analogy alive, what are we going to do, and how do we make sure that that happens? And so I think that having some sort of commitment towards that, and when you see that in law enforcement too, depending on, of course, where you live, overall, they'll put plans in place to actually recruit more, or they'll open up more kind of slots in the state police academy or whatever it is, et cetera, et cetera. Are we doing that in security? Are we putting a concerted effort to this and actually formalizing this in a way that we can actually evolve that? And I don't think it's just about volume of people. Certainly, we all see the stats about how many more people we need in the industry. But, you know, I think we take better quality over volume at any point. What are we doing to actually make that happen, or what should we be doing, I guess?
Yeah, and certainly your point about quality over quantity is important. You know, I think a good security analyst who is properly trained, has the experience, has the exposure, is going to be worth more than, you know, a half dozen people without the appropriate exposure. Now, the interesting piece is that the education business, because let's face it, education is a business, has really latched on, right? So they've gone, okay, well, there's a market problem. We need more people that are trained in X, Y, and Z, and they've developed programs around that. You know, the unfortunate portion is that, at least in my experience, what I've seen in most of the educational security-focused programs is that they're teaching folks to click buttons. You know, I have some formal education, no formal degree or anything like that. But I had a professor who once kind of laid it down for me in terms that I could understand. Said, look, you know, in order to be a security expert, you have to be an expert in a number of different disciplines. So you have to have been exposed to the help desk function. You know, you have to know how to troubleshoot computer issues. You know how you have to know how computers run, how operating systems run. From there, you move into systems administration. How do you maintain availability and integrity of computer servers, of systems that people use to do their jobs? From there, you move into network. How do you make sure that the network is up and running? Learn the network rules. How does it operate? And then from there, you move into development. How do you write code? How do applications function? And then once you've mastered those domains, you know, mastered to a certain extent, you're then ready to take the step in your career into security. Because at the end of the day, security, you need expertise across all of those other domains. You need to know how computers work. You need to know how operating systems work. You need to know how networks work. And you need to know how applications work, how code works, and so on and so forth. In my own opinion, I don't think that the programs out there today, the InfoSec-specific programs out there today, are really doing a good job at bringing us that kind of person. They tend to really focus on security-specific things. This is how you operate a firewall. This is how you operate an IDS. This is how you operate this tool and that tool.
That's interesting. Yeah, I remember two companies ago, our security research team, I think probably the most talented person on that team was a former network engineer, right? So he got networking at a level that none of those guys knew. And he actually had been on the chip level at one point in his career. So, you know, totally, as you were talking that through, you could almost visualize of like start at that layer, figure that stuff out first. Because going back to your earlier point, like that's what the bad guys are doing, right? They're figuring out all that the ways in, and that doesn't just start with focusing on the firewall. It's way before that, and of course, way after that as well. So we talked a little bit too about how people can influence technology and the products, and vice versa. Of course, the utility belt kind of mentality that we were talking about with this analogy that continues on. That might be what we just have to rename the entire pod. But you know, tell me a little bit about, and you know, I don't want to dive too much into the corporate world of Rapid7, but I guess they are our sponsors for this show. But one of the things I found fascinating when I started was the Insight IDR product that we have. Not necessarily the product itself. It's great. Don't get me wrong. Go to the website, blah, blah, blah. But the influence that you guys and your team had on the development of this product, to me, having been in technology and specifically security for a long time, that was pretty unique of the fact that you guys had a day-to-day concept of what you needed, almost as the customer, and that inspired a lot of the feature functionality in the product itself. So I'd love to hear, like, how did that work overall?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's kind of born out of a core belief that I have around products in general. You know, when you set out to build a product to solve a specific problem, because look, at the end of the day, we're in the business of making money, and therefore, if you want to make money, you build a product that people are going to buy that solves problems for them. But kind of getting back to my core belief, you know, when I sit down with software developers and we're thinking about a product that we're going to build, I always emphasize solving the problem for the expert user first. There are a lot of reasons why that's actually advantageous versus taking the other way around, and you're solving the problem for the lower end of the scale and then trying to build up for the expert use case. And the reason why I think the expert use case comes first is because in the expert use case, you're not so much focused on user interface. You're focused on functionality. You're focused on data. You're focused on what is going to empower those experts to do the job that they're charged with doing, the job that really very few other people in the world are able to do. And that's where the whole relationship with the Insight IDR team came from. We came in, User Insight at the time was a great user behavior analysis product, but for us it was really just a point solution. Great, it's a detection tool, but what I really need is an entire suite of tools that help augment every activity that we perform in the IDR lifecycle. So I needed an endpoint agent because we're having these alerts that are flagged by the user behavior analysis, but now I need to be able to go validate it. I need to make sure that it's a false positive or a true positive versus a false positive. From there, once I've validated that this is indeed a bad thing, now I need to be able to go look across the rest of my environment in order to see what other systems may have been impacted by this particular indicator. That's where search comes into play, the endpoint agent comes into play. And then last but not least, I really have to be able to deep dive, investigate what the attackers did. Where did they go? Did they steal data? Did they get access to stuff that I don't want them to get access to? And again, that's where search and the endpoint agent is so important for us. And that's really where the partnership was born out of. We needed a set of tools to enable our methodology and, handily so, there was a team of developers over there building an IDR tool. We really kind of hitched our wagon to that technology and worked with them in order to get our requirements put together and to actually see them materialize into Insight IDR. Now, I haven't covered the process part of it yet because that's really where the difficult one comes into play. You know, at the end of the day, we have a great collaboration with the products team. And collaboration is the most important but also the most difficult business goal to achieve because it's about people working with people. People are all different. They have different ways of thinking, different ways of visualizing things. So that's where it was a little bit more difficult for us. The incident response team is based out of Alexandria, Virginia. The product team is in Cambridge, Massachusetts for the most part. And that geographic difference really made it so that building that relationship, understanding how the developers thought, understanding how the responders thought, was really difficult. But we took the time to learn about them, to build, to leverage for the common good, and that's where the gold of Insight IDR came to be.
And I think it's something that I'm sure a lot of people can relate to, just inside of their own companies. I mean, they have dispersed teams that have to work together. And you got to figure out how to do that process. And I'm sure there's incident response teams within organizations that are disparate as well. And how do you make sure that that process and that workflow is working? It's not just about technology, and it's not just about people. It's about kind of breaking through some of those processes and making sure it works. And when things get uncomfortable, people are figuring that out as quickly as possible and pushing that forward. And so I think that probably resonates deeply for folks. So. Let's two more things. The first, and they're both kind of looking forward because we've been talking a lot about kind of the past overall. But what are, at least on your radar when it comes to incident response, detection, this kind of, so if we were going to rewrite kind of Anton's blog post and we're, 4 years in the future, 5 years in the future, maybe just a year in the future, what's shifted, or what do you hope has shifted kind of in this space so that either A, things are better, or I hope, or B, things aren't so better? Where do you, when you put your crystal ball on, where do you think things are kind of headed?
Well, Crystal ball, not so much, because, you know, if I had a crystal ball that actually worked, I'd probably be playing the lotto. But what I really hope to see is that organizations are a lot more personal about the way that they implement security programs within their own environments. Right now we have regulatory bodies and we have best practices and we have blah, 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 that people kind of follow blindly. They don't necessarily think about it in the context of their own business. I've heard probably half a dozen customers say, yeah, we need a threat intelligence solution. Well, yeah, fine, but what are you doing for your core security programs? How are you ensuring that authentication authorization is applied globally throughout your infrastructure? How do you ensure that your employees have only the access that they need to do their jobs? What do you do around being able to manage your attack surface as far as vulnerability scanning and patching and two-factor access and all that kind of stuff? You know, all of those kind of core IT security functions really have to be tailored to your organization, because once you have that foundation in place, then you can really focus on building your prevention, detection, and response aspects on solid footing. Again, tailored to your organization. Company A might be dealing with different data than company B. They might have different business practices. They might have different priorities from the board or the executive team. So it's really important for security professionals to not just look at what's working in the industry, but evaluate what could work best for their own environment, making sure that they are building solutions that are tailored to the problems and the goals that they're trying to achieve.
Yeah, and I feel like, too, this is a chicken and egg issue where we were talking about education and we were talking about, you know, getting people to, you know, quote unquote, be smarter. And really what you're talking about, too, is think about things strategically. Don't just follow the game plan that's kind of been laid out for you, or the policy, or whatever it is, that's been there. You got to be a critical thinker, and you got to be creative thinking in this space. And I think that's hard for a lot of people. And so, you know, again, are we going to be able to educate people to do that? Because there's just not enough people that maybe naturally think that way. Or am I being overly negative?
Well, I mean, to a certain extent, I think you're correct. Strategic thinking is a skill that's learned, I think, more than anything else. But, you know, in the short term, if you don't have the kind of resources that you feel that you need in order to achieve your strategic program planning, if you don't have the resources that you need in order to implement the technology or the technical aspects of your IDR program, there's help out there. I mean, you know, the organization that I've built here at Rapid7 is actually instrumented for that. We have program development offerings where we can go in, learn about your business, learn about your environment, learn about your goals and your problems, and we can help you devise solutions in order to meet those goals and to address those particular problems. We have product offerings that can be leveraged by technical folks who might not have as deep an understanding as some would like, but still would be able to provide a great value add when coupled with the right piece of technology. And last but not least, we have managed services where we are still focused on your business. We are tailoring our managed services to meet your goals, to address your problems, but we're doing it with our staff, with our experts, with our technology. And so the way that we have structured our IDR programs are really for not a one-size-fits-all, but I guess having a size to fit every organization out there. We can help you regardless of your maturity, regardless of your people investment, your process investment, your technology investment. It's just a matter of reaching out to Rapid7, to organizations like Rapid7, and figuring out how they can help. The first step is really admitting that you might be in over your head. And even if you're not in over your head, two brains is always better than one. I will always contend that.
Yeah, no, and I mean, that's we've lived that in so many different other disciplines. And now I think security is seeing kind of that as well, and that's partially just maturity of the industry overall, and that we have Yeah, we just have more smart people thinking about this stuff, which is awesome. But I love that approach of not, you know, one size fits all. It's more like our fit sizes all or something. I'll have to come up with something better than that. But that idea that no matter where you stand right now, we can at least help you and we can amplify what you got. And I think that's just a measure of an attitude that I think more people have to have. And I think we're seeing it overall, right, in the industry. So let me finish with probably the most important question. What was your favorite go-to when it came to, you know, building and breaking down all those Legos in the living room floor when you were a kid?
I really couldn't even tell you. I mean, I built...
tall towers? Do we do, like, cars?
All of the above. Medieval castles,
really?
Boats,
oh,
cars, yeah. Motorcycles, everything. Everything. I mean, if it could be imagined and built with Legos, I would do it. Dirty little secret, I still put a Lego train around the family Christmas tree every Christmas.
Nice. I love it. Yeah, my kids are so into, well, my two older boys are really into Legos. One of the things I've started to do is, you know, because they come prepackaged now with all the directions. And now my wife and I will give them one of those sets every once in a while, but then we'll actually rip out the directions in the other one so that they just got to figure it out themselves. And we're like, dude, if you don't want to build that, then don't. Just go build something else. Just build. Just do something.
Love it.
Yeah,
yep.
And you got to keep that creative thinking going. So, awesome. Wade, I really appreciate it. You'll always be known as the first podcast guest, and I think that will probably be something that I'm sure you'll put on LinkedIn. I'm sure you'll, you know, get a trophy. We'll make sure that we acknowledge that wherever we go. But I appreciate it, and I know we'll be talking soon as well.
Absolutely. I'm really excited about this, Kyle. Certainly an honor to be the first guest, but I'm looking forward to the future of this podcast. I will be an avid listener.
Perfect. All right. And thanks, everyone, for listening.
Thanks, everyone. Take care.